The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. I'm organized today. No, really, I have it all together. I've got all kinds of information. I've got tons of stuff to talk about. I'm going to shock you a little bit in the first half hour, and I have also our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for the week on the Articles of Confederation to play for you. But we've got something. It just occurred to me before the show. I'm looking at my reporters. We've got Derek Park, Jim Dykes, and our new reporter on Gun Tech, as I'm calling it, until I talk to Donnie, because he's so new, Donnie Chapman. And who is going to do our last report. All three of these guys are veterans. And so this is very cool. And so it's interesting kind of themes that are developing. We have our amazing women reporters on Tuesday, including Jean Vernick, who's now producing the show. Also Shelby Fournette, who does Cruise and Travel, and Josie Cossi, who does the Latino Report. And so it's just interesting how these different themes are developing. Today, it's like, you know, guy veterans. We've got, you know, Donnie, Jim, and Derek. So it's really quite fascinating. Derek does the economic report. And then we have our now two gun reports on Friday. Donnie, who does Gun Tech at 8:30, and Jim Dykes, who does the Second Amendment report at 8 o'clock. So we're covering a lot of ground here. The show's always changing. It's always expanding. New reporters, new things going on. And this is an exciting place to be because we're very adaptable here because I'm the boss and I don't care. I like to do new things. Gene, good morning. How's the week summing up for you with all the different things that are going on?
Good morning. Oh, there definitely is a lot going on, isn't there? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no lack of material to talk about or cover.
Exactly.
Or legislate on or anything else that's happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me start in with the controversy right away. There's an article that I couldn't possibly put on Facebook. In fact, I think all of the I tried one, the Newsweek article. I figured Newsweek I could sneak this in. But most of the stuff I'm going to read to you today cannot be shared on social media. That's why I do it here. And so you can take the show, share the show, share, you know, we're live now, so you can obviously share us live, which is the best way to do it, but also podcast. And we still have a majority of our listeners are podcast. And we're growing audiences in Australia, Canada, England, Israel, and some other places. And so we're going to be taking Action Radio to those places and helping those folks show them what we do here in terms of citizen legislation and then adapting it to parliamentary systems and other things. So a lot of stuff's happening that is just incredibly exciting around here. I believe we are the most unique show in the world, certainly the only one with a citizen legislature. And so that's what, you know, keeps us, you know, as I call it, on the cutting edge of freedom. All right. So I've got until about 7 minutes before the bottom of the hour. Then I'll play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. Natural News. Natural News is one of those amazing sites that's automatically banned. It's Brian Chivoli. No, excuse me. I'm sorry. That's a Health Impact. Mike Adams. Mike Adams does Natural News. Both of these are routinely banned, but they're great sources to go to. So Natural News and also Brian's publications, Health Impact News and Vaccine Impact. Looks like mice come up with a new word, vax assassination. Okay, you look at it, it's vaxassassination. I had no idea. I'm just guessing how to pronounce it because it's an article, right? It says how globalists convince billions of people to exterminate themselves with biological weapons presented as, quote, vaccines, or as I'm calling it now, shooting up with mRNA, you know, spike protein. This is recent. You've got a video on it too here, I think. Looks like, okay, so this is September. Oh, that's situation update, September 14th. So this is September 14th. So 17th, so 3 days ago. All right. So Mike Adams writes, it's now all incredibly clear. Everything we've been watching over the last 20 months has been a globalist-led effort to convince billions of people to exterminate themselves without them knowing it. See, waging an open kinetic war on humanity would meet instant resistance. People tend to fight back when they're being attacked and slaughtered with bullets and bombs. So globalists had to figure out a way to carry out mass slaughter on a planetary scale without alerting the masses to what they were doing. It's a very difficult challenge, but they figured out how to achieve it in a few simple steps. One, first, build a toxic nanoparticle weapon system, and that's the spike protein, and mass produce it in labs run by the Chinese and the U.S. military. Two, fake an outbreak in China along with, quote, leaked scary videos of Chinese people falling over dead in mere seconds after breathing the, quote, virus. Cue media frenzy. Three, drop the toxic nanoparticles on New York City and northern Italy to simulate a viral outbreak while diagnosing people with COVID via PCR tests that merely detect the presence of the toxic nanoparticles. Four, unleash mass media propaganda claiming everybody will die unless they take vaccines. And then five, watch this, there's more here. Fill the vaccines with the exact same toxic nanoparticles you dropped on New York City in the first place. Six, unleash mass injections of the population with the spike protein bioweapons fraudulently labeled, quote, vaccines. Seven, as people get injected with the bioweapons, they start shedding the toxic nanoparticles, making others sick around them. Frame this as a, quote, worsening pandemic, you know, or as I would call it, the variants, to spread more fear and drive more people into the spike protein injections. And eight, censor anyone talking about vaccine injuries or deaths, pay off hospital administrators to wildly exaggerate COVID numbers to keep the scandemic going. Says in a nutshell, that's how they did it. Notice there is no virus required to pull it off. All they needed was a spike protein nanoparticle weapon system combined with media collusion and big tech censorship. All right. So there's more of it. I'll just finish this last paragraph. From the globalist point of view, the real genius in all of this is how they've managed to get people to beg for their own vaccine death shots. Never before in human history had the masses been manipulated into lining up demanding their own deaths. The vaccine holocaust is a stealth operation requiring no bullets, bombs, or missiles. It only needs censorship, journo-terrorism, and a toxic nanoparticle bioweapon combined with a fraudulent PCR protocol authorized by the criminal CDC. Now, it looks like I got a bunch of phone calls already here. And so we're going to, let me see, I'm going to have to do some quick screening here because Gene's on location, actually away from the computer. So I'll go with that. In fact, it looks like I think I got Kyle checking in here. So I asked him to report on California. So I might, sort of diverge from my original plan here and go from there. So, Gene, I don't necessarily agree with that, but I'm not going to tell you which parts yet. So what do you think so far? How does that strike you?
Oh, gosh. Well, hold on. I got some noise here with dogs.
That's okay. I'm used to it.
I believe it. And it was interesting last night with, so many people wanting the, pushing the vaccine, certain people, and mm-hmm. how much success some doctors are doing with their remedies of what they use. And I forget how one of them treated, I don't know, I wrote it down, but I think it was like 1,800 people and zero died. Now, you can't uh-huh. tell me. If that would be mainstream physicians working in the hospitals, that would have, and you could say, well, they didn't have a sick of people. It's like, if it would be treated the way it should be treated, we wouldn't get to that point. So how sad, how very sad.
Yeah. The part is,
I can totally understand what you're saying and see that being the truth because of so much push for the narrative of certain things that is not working.
The part I disagree with is the whole idea this is a global genocide, because if the globalists want power, and power implies money, and money implies people to buy the products and services that the powerful are producing in order for them to make more money. So if you kill off all the people, it's like the tobacco companies. They can kill off a certain amount of people, but they can't kill off everybody or no one's going to buy their cigarettes. In the same way,
right.
Here with the vaccines, it's money. It's a marketing scheme over anything else. And then I'll get to Kyle and another caller here. I'm going to check in with another caller first. It looks like a new caller to the show. So go ahead, Gene. I'm sorry. I'm busy this morning.
I was going to say, however, it is still getting to their narrative because they can control who mm-hmm. who lives. I mean, where are they pushing the vaccines?
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So it does make sense. Is it true or not? Time will tell.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to push it on the Democrat states. They're all compliant little sheep anyway. Where they're pushing it is on us independent Republicans. And as I said in a Facebook tweet recently, you know, have these geniuses thought of the fact that if they, you know, force a vaccine that kills a whole bunch of people, you know, the compliant are going to die and they're going to be left with us rebels who won't take it. So they're actually increasing the population of rebels. Let me try this one call here real quick. And I'm sorry you can't. Normally, G screens the calls and talks to all our callers before they come on the air, especially a new caller, so that we know what you're going to say. But every once in a while, I have to take a chance, and this is one of them. So 540 area code, welcome to the show. This is Action Radio. I'm Greg. And if we can get your first name and where you're calling from.
Michael, and I'm calling from Navarre Beach, Florida.
Okay, hi, Michael. Yeah, you got a little bit of a background noise there, but yes, welcome to Action Radio.
Sorry, I'm driving by one of the ranges going to Pensacola, and a little bit messy with the radio. But I just wanted to call in. I learned about the radio show through Donald Chapman, and him.
Yeah, he's on 8:30. Yeah,
we flew together, you know, and I just got done shooting the other night for the Warrior game. I'm a member of the Air Force Wounded Warrior team that competes.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, Donnie helps me out with my guns and stuff like that. So I was shooting from the back of my Jeep because, you know, down in Santa Rosa, we've had storms the past couple of days.
Right.
So I was shooting from the back of my Jeep into the target. But, you know, Chappie, you know, he's the best, you know, gunsmith I know around here. And better than that, he's an awesome person. But to talk about, you know, the one thing that you were talking about with COVID, I actually was on a team that we wrote a grant up and got free synergy testing for everybody. I got this and brought it to Santa Rosa County to the officials. And, you know, it was part of the Homeland Health and Services grant. And they were like, well, we don't want to implement this and do mass mandatory testing. But now they're doing the same thing, the vaccines. And it's like nobody actually gets tested before or after they get the vaccination.
That's a huge point. And
we worked on the grant and had a $96 million grant approved. But, you know, with grants, they're only approved if people use them. So when we brought it back to Santa Rosa County and they're like, well, we need, you know, to hear from Congressman Keats and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, he voted on this. The House of Homeland Services voted on this, and they gave us the money to do this. And what it would have done is, you know, you could have implemented it at any school or anything like that. But, you know, you have that piece on the side with the testing. But also, there's two people that just held huge lawsuits, and that's 3M for the ears for earplugs. And then Pfizer settled a huge lawsuit with the military for off-label testing of medications.
Wow.
And the two people that have made the most...
Michael, I need to hold you up. I need to hold you up just for a second because I want to give you an hour to talk about all this. I've got Kyle waiting from California to report on what happened there. And I don't mean to cut you off, but I really want to give you more time to do it. And we just don't have it right now in the show because I've got Derek coming on the bottom of the hour and other things to play. So first of all, glad that you found the show. I'm glad that you're listening. I'm really glad that you called in. You're welcome to listen in. In fact, if you want to call back and talk a bit about this when Chappie's on at 8:30, you're certainly welcome to. But if I can get you just to listen now, and I'll be in touch with you. You can get me on Facebook or I'll text you a message. And let's get you on. Let's talk about this because you got some really good issues. I've always wanted to do the earplug issue. And if you've got a Pfizer thing, you know, the whole COVID stuff takes priority. Would that be okay to just have you listen for a bit and then we'll get you next week scheduled for some time to really expand on these?
Oh, yeah.
How's that sound?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. All right, sir. So let me I'm just going to mute your line for now. And, well, I'll leave you live for a bit. Let me get Kyle right here. In fact, you might want to comment on what Kyle's doing, too. We do have national cross-country conversations a lot of times. Kyle, sorry for the delay, and I'm glad you called in. You know, like I say, I wasn't sure if you're going to be able to make it this morning. So I had this a lot of stuff prepared, but I got the main article that I wanted to talk about. So we're doing well. So let's talk California. Direct from Sacramento himself, you know, Kyle, what's going on? What happened to your state? Vote fraud? Looks like vote fraud won.
Well, the amount of radio noise I'm getting from your other caller who is on his in his car is pretty intense. So I don't.
You know, I just
anyway.
Muted Michael. That's okay, Michael. Again, thanks for calling. You can stay. Mute. You can stay on the line as long as you want. I'll check in with you a little bit. If you're still here when Chappie's on, I'll bring you back live. Or maybe I'll just check in with you other times. Who knows? This is kind of cool. Listen, I love new callers, and this Michael's going to be a good one. We're going to have him on for all kinds of something tells me information. All right. So before the election, after the election, during the election, what happened?
Two things I've got before we kick into that. A, what was the article that you were referencing to at the beginning of the show? And B, what's the short of the earplug issue?
Okay, the article is Natural News. It's Mike Adams writes it. He's the editor. It's Tuesday, September 14th, and it's called Vax Assassination, How Globalists Convince Billions of People to Exterminate Themselves with Biological Weapons Presented as, quote, Vaccines. And so Natural News is one of my great go-to sources because social media instantly bans it. You can't even put it on. Anything coming from Natural News immediately will get you censored. And so that's why I use them a lot on the show, because they're good. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of his conclusions. I think his evidence is fabulous. I think his conclusions are, in many cases, wrong. At least I hope so.
Okay, but Natural News, what was the guy's name?
Mike Adams. I've been trying to get him on the show for, I don't know, a year now.
I love it. What was the date of the article?
September 14th.
September 14th.
Yeah.
And Vax Assassination, right on.
Mm-hmm.
And what's this?
Yep.
What's this, and I think your viewers would love that highlight as well. And what was the short that the gentleman, the wonderful caller, in just a minute ago talked about?
Okay.
Earphones?
Yeah, this has been a scandal for a while. I don't. In fact, I'll check in with. Let me bring back Michael live real quick here, because what happened was the military was issued. Your car noise is really bad, so I'm going to leave you on for a quick second, Michael. But make sure I get this right. The military was issued substandard hearing protection for combat, for range use, for just general ear protection from firearms, and a lot of people lost their hearing, or lost some of their hearing. They've got tinnitus. They've got all kinds of other ear problems, and there's a massive lawsuit on that. Michael, have I got that about right? Michael, you're back live again.
Sir.
Okay.
A lot of us air crew, we had our own earplugs, and, you know, there were certain ones that they designed, and then there were the certain ones that they made that everybody got. So they go back and they look at who actually has the right earplugs that they're talking about, and then if you've been diagnosed with tinnitus or hearing loss, you know, it's easier to tell the people that just came on board when the lawsuit happened. It was like, yeah, my ears hurt. And for veterans that we actually have diagnosed with hearing loss and tinnitus from our, you know, assessment. But basically 3M settled the lawsuit about the time COVID was coming out. And so now it's like millions of dollars they're paying out. But now with COVID, 3M is the largest supplier of masks, of gloves, of like any medical supplies where you have chalk that you're cleaning up patient waste, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they settled a lawsuit for millions, they're gaining billions. And it's like, okay, if you settle this lawsuit with the military, we'll make sure you come out on the end. And who has gained the most out of this than 3M and Pfizer?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I'm going to mute you again, Mike, because we do have some noise there. And I only have about 5 minutes for Kyle now. This is how crazy we are this morning, because I've got our Santa Rosa piece. You know, our main sponsor here is Santa Rosa Volunteers, so I'm going to play our Articles of Confederation thing in a bit. I'm going to make those shorter. I can't get carried away. All right, Kyle, so in 5 minutes, it's all yours. What the hell happened in California with the white supremacist, the very black Larry Elder?
Yeah, kind of going to the end of the story, I think it might have been a lot of our independent and Republicans' fault for liking him. Because, again, I'm generalizing here, folks out there. If you're a normal Democrat or a human Democrat, don't take offense to this. But I think most of the racism comes from the left.
Oh, it always
does. Most of the racism... Yeah. No, I mean, and Greg, I know you know this stuff. I'm speaking just to sum this up and
tell your
audience, remind your audience, have them hear it again. Most racism comes from Democrats. It has from the beginning of time. And again, it doesn't mean all Democrats are racist, but most racism is started from the Democratic Party. It is stirred by the Democratic Party. It's been the only way the Democratic Party could exist for years is create fear, division, racism. So in fear and division comes from many different angles, including from the beginning of time, how the globalists, the kings and queens, have controlled all of us forever. So we independents, Republicans probably, I know myself, loved Larry Elder because I know how he spoke. I know who he was. I followed the guy for 10, 15 years, and he just made sense. And what a crazy thought to have a state, California, which has completely gone off the rails as far as logic. It's completely an emotional state. Its representation actually matched the vote. If I remember the vote's results, because I don't watch the news anymore, I don't read the papers anymore, so I get glimpses of this stuff. But the results were about 65-35, which 65% said no, keep. No meant keep the governor at present, and 35% right. meant yes, which about mirrors our overall coverage or our representation of how people are registered. So what I learned from this, which was pretty scary, is how good the Democrats are at using, for instance, the president to come in and compare Larry Elder, who is not Trump at all, and by the way, Trump himself is a wonderful person if you get to meet Trump, but the Trump that the media had created, they made Larry Elder look like. So the Democratic Party was scared into submission through wonderful marketing tactics, evil marketing tactics that the Democrats have. The leadership of their party is as evil as the day is long, and they're really good at creating evil and pumping it into their voters. So basically, how the vote came out is how the people are registered, 65% Democrat, 35% Republican, per se, even though the registration's 46 Democrat, I believe it's 30% independent and 25% Republican. It's somewhat representation of the sensitivity of this state of California. In summation, I live in a state that's so sensitive that all they can think is democratically, and or they're so highly registered democratically that that's how they voted. So in complete summation, I don't think the state learned anything other than the fact that maybe the positive thing could be is it clearly shows to anybody that's on the right or the center how racist the left is. If they had to listen to a black Republican for the next year and a half, it would have shattered all of their lies.
Oh, yeah, and the fact that Larry Elder's been on the radio for, I don't know, 20 years, or I'm not sure how long he's been on, but he's a long-term talk show host. And, the Democrats didn't have a war against him then. It's only when they want power. You know, see, talk show hosts don't really have a whole lot of power as a talk show host. The real power, comes when talk show hosts become, legislators, become politicians, become governors and mayors and things like that, or presidents in the case of, Donald Trump. And that's when they scare them, because the Democrats are all about power. But people should know, if you look at slavery, the slave states were Democrat states. The Civil War was started by the Confederacy, which was the Democrat Party. Segregation, Jim Crow, those are all Democrat laws. The KKK is the militant arm of the Democrat Party, just as Black Lives Matter and Antifa is today. So nothing's changed. It's the same stuff. I've only got a couple of minutes left here. I have a question that no one's actually, I guess, asked, or at least I haven't heard it yet. Do you think that the amount of people that moved out of California, which includes me, I left in 2017 for my radio show here in Florida, most of those people, I bet you 90% were Republicans. Do you think that had any impact on the election?
Well, yeah, since my dad left in 1990 for the same reasons you left,
okay. And
everybody else left. Bravado, masculinity, common sense, logic has been leaving this state since at least my father left in 1990. I didn't study it prior to then. So it's just been a constant flow of a logical exodus of California. California is, palm trees, fake boobs, pretty, Hollywood, fake, sensitive, democratic, lies, left,
Wasn't always. I mean, when I got there, we had Republican governors. We had Pete Wilson and Duke Majan,
right,
some of those boring people on the face of the earth.
Sure.
But they built reservoirs. They built power plants. They you know, and all the things that were stopped by the wacko environmentalists. You know, it was crazy.
But you and me and the forefathers got everything done. The bar was built. Then the bar, so to speak, the wonderful bar that your grandparents, my grandparents built, were turned over to the sensitive ones to run. And they've been running it into the ground since about 1980, 1985, 1990, 1995, whenever their complete control took over.
Yeah, you'll never see the Democrats build something up, but you'll see them destroy it every time. Kyle, I got to hold you up. I've got to play a piece here. But if you want to schedule some time and talk more about this, or just let me know when you can call in. I'm sorry, it's just a very busy morning. Fridays are getting kind of crazy around here now. I do plan to expand the show to 3 hours, so I will have more time to do this. And I'll be announcing exactly when in a little bit. But for right now, I have to let you go.
In conclusion, in my 30-second exit, I would just remind the audience that typically speaking, as you mentioned earlier, back in the day, in the 70s, the man made the money, the woman took care of the household and spent the money. Well, nothing's changed other than the fact that the Democrats now spend the money and the Republicans no longer take care of the household, no longer make the money. So we only have a spender and a watcher left, or however you would put that.
I'm sure Gene has a comment for you, but I'm gonna have to let you go for now. But yeah, that's where I call the Republicans the GOP, as in the gelding old party. And on that note, I'm gonna play something here. You take care, Kyle. Thank you so much for calling in today. I appreciate it.
You asked, I called.
And I appreciate that. That's wonderful. But let's talk more. You should call more often if you can, because you got some really good opinions. I want to hear what's going on out there. You're sort of our connection to the left coast. All right, let me play this now, and I'll be back with Derek Park on our financial report right after this.
Over and out.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. In our last episode, we covered the first three of the Articles of Confederation articles, and discovered that the states had a built-in firm league of friendship with each other, which I believe the Federalists thought got in the way of all their power being centered in the federal government and away from any state compacts. That's why the Constitution left this principle out. Article 4 carries this mutual state friendship even further when it starts out saying, "The better to secure and perpetuate mutual friendship and intercourse among the people of the different states in this union, the free inhabitants of each of these states, paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives from justice excepted, shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of free citizens of the several states." This part of the Articles of Confederation wasn't put into the Constitution until after the Civil War with the 14th Amendment, and even then, there was no mutual state friendship pact included. Given the war between the Confederacy and the Union, this is understandable. Again, as with the ratification of the Constitution, there was to be isolation of the states from the states. Mutual friendship and intercourse among the people of the different states means trade and travel, something we were told was difficult under the Articles of Confederation, which I now believe was a lie in order to break any mutual state friendship, connection, agreement, support, or for any reason that might threaten federal supremacy in the new Constitution, without, of course, saying so openly. Also interesting is that Article 4 contains the phrase, "the free inhabitants of each of these states, paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives from justice excepted," which means that privileges and immunities, mutual friendship and intercourse, were for free people. Free meaning free of crime and dependence. This is fascinating because nowhere does the Constitution I know of single out paupers, vagabonds, and fugitives from justice and openly make them unqualified for constitutional rights. The closest the Constitution comes is the Fifth Amendment, which says, "No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, which means everyone, regardless of being paupers, vagabonds, or fugitives from justice, have all their rights automatically unless due process of law takes them away. However, the Articles of Confederation reversed the assumption that everyone has constitutional rights until denied by due process of law and declares that only free people are entitled to privileges and immunities in the Articles of Confederation before they get their rights. This was a real problem for the Articles of Confederation because there could be no presumption of innocence for people who weren't qualified for rights to begin with, and it violates the Declaration of Independence that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. The Constitution was right to change this article. However, there is one very interesting thing we can learn from this. Many, including me, do not believe that people on government welfare, not Social Security, Medicare, or pensions, but working-age people on welfare should not be able to vote because they are able to vote themselves more of other people's money, and politicians who give them more welfare can count on their vote. So in that respect, I believe the exclusion of paupers, as defined by my online dictionary as a recipient of government relief or public charity from voting on other people's money, would be correct. Should vagabonds have the right to vote? A vagabond is, by dictionary definition, a person who wanders from place to place without a home or job. This gives rise to the idea, in part, that the Constitution was written for white men with property, because they pay taxes and had a stake in the community. Although I've never seen anything like this written in any founding document, which means it probably is a modern prejudice against white men or people who have acquired property. Since it is necessary to have a physical address and lawful ID to vote, vagabonds might not be eligible to even register to vote. But that should not prevent the wandering from being able to vote. Wandering is not a crime. As for fugitives from justice, as in all discussions of the accused, it is of paramount and primary importance to always operate from the presumption of innocence, lest the innocent be denied life, liberty, and property. So fugitives could not be excluded from any constitutional right and should not have been in the exception to rights under the Articles of Confederation. Again, the Constitution got this right. Article 4 has two more clauses, one which is an extradition clause, which says, if any person guilty of or charged with treason, felony, or other high misdemeanor in any state shall flee from justice and be found in any of the United States, he shall, upon demand of the governor or executive power of the state from which he fled, be delivered up and removed to the state having jurisdiction of his offense. Sounds reasonable to me. And the last sentence of Article 4 says, full faith and credit shall be given in each of these states to the records, acts, and judicial proceedings of the courts and magistrates of every other state. And this made it into the Constitution again in Article 4, but it's slightly different. This is as far as I'll go with the Articles of Confederation for now, but I shall return as needed as we go through the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, returning to both the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution as necessary. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go, Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money. All right, we have limited time with Derek this morning, so I'm going to let him get right to it. And Michael, I know you're still on the line. Stay as long as you want throughout the show, and if I get a chance, we'll probably have a chance before Jim gets on. I'll get you back on the line as well. Derek, good morning, sir. Welcome to our all-veteran now Friday reporters. You, Jim, and Donnie Chapman, who's going to be joining us at 8:30. This is kind of cool. I like Friday.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
You got this. Yeah. Got the full stack of wonderful reporters.
Absolutely. And we have to get I want to get you and Donnie together, and we need to get out shooting. And so he's putting together, I guess, a class, and because he'll be doing some competitive shooting out at Escambia River Gun Club. And so I want to start taking part in that again, because I used to compete. And it was a whole lot of fun, and it definitely sharpens your skills. All right, sir, what's going on with the economy? Let's get the official report, and then we can dissect as much of what's going on while you have time.
All right. Well, this is Derek Park of Ever Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. U.S. equities finished mixed despite a surprise in rising retail sales. Long-term government bond yields rose in response to better-than-expected data and consumer discretionary sector outperformance. Regional equity performance was mixed. European stocks closed in positive territory, but Asian markets were lower on increasing concerns over problems of China property giant Evergrande and continuing regulatory uncertainty that is impacting the casino stocks. Oil was little changed after four consecutive days up, but sentiment in the energy space remains positive following a more optimistic demand outlook from OPEC. U.S. equities closed lower today, with the Dow Jones down 63 points, or 0.18, to 34,751. NASDAQ Composite closed up 20 points, or 0.13, to 15,182. And the S&P 500 index closed down 7 points, or 0.2, to 44.74. In the bond market, 10-year Treasury yields were trading at 1.33%, higher by 0.03. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was flat at $72.62, and the spot price of gold was down $40, or minus 2.23%, to $17.54.80. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones, member SIPC. You can give me at 850-995-0082.
Wow, there's so much going on. I mean, I haven't heard the word OPEC for years, because nobody cared, because, you know, during the Trump administration, we were energy independent. So why do we care that OPEC's optimistic? What's going on? I see the price of gasoline's going up around here. And Bill Fecky was on yesterday reporting that his travels up through Wyoming, South Dakota, North Dakota, gas prices are over $3, way over $3, like $3.60-something a gallon up there. What's going on?
Yeah, well, the bottom line is OPEC still owns about a 68% foothold on oil production around the world.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously we were growing independence, but we still relied on foreign oil. I don't want to say we were completely independent, you know, because there are certain products that they have that we don't have. Mm-hmm. So, you know, import is still necessary. But, you know, I mean, obviously OPEC can still influence the world's market. So, I mean, you have International Energy Federation or something like that, and that's like another 15 countries that have kind of come together, and they're like 30% or 40% of the oil's production, and I'm not sure where the U.S. sits in that one, but everybody said they're going to increase production. Where these prices are coming from, I think, is just making up for lost money beforehand. I think they're price gouging, to be honest.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I remember when I never thought we were fully energy independent, but the difference is when we have a large domestic supply, you know, so we'll go back to the basics of economic supply and demand. When we have a large domestic supply, we have a counter to OPEC. So even if we do need some of their products, if they charge too much money, we're going to buy more of our domestic supply, which is probably going to hopefully lower the cost of it here, because we're buying more domestic. It's cheaper to produce and it's right here. So if OPEC wants to sell more oil, they have to lower their price below our price. And then it gets more attractive over, which means our folks either have to produce more, put more on the market, or lower their prices. And so there's a back and forth. But when you take out our domestic production, when the Biden coup, you know, takes all the drilling off the foreign off the federal land, and they restrict everything that's going on, they cancel the XL pipeline, they basically kill our domestic oil production. There's no supply to counter the supply coming from OPEC. That's the way it looks to me.
Yeah, there's a that's part of it.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you know, our oil consumption, you know, we're one of the most thirsty nations in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's
you know,
a good thing.
And
freedom.
That's
what freedom looks like, folks. Freedom
is
a gas-powered big truck. This new electric F-150 is going to purr. So it's really, can you just see rednecks driving an electric F-150? I'm sorry to digress a bit, but just the idea of Billy Bob driving an electric F-150. I want you to listen to my truck start up. Can you hear it? It's just not going to, you know, the Marlboro man would not be driving, you know, an electric car. I'm fascinated to see how they market this thing. Anyway, I digress. Back to you. I'm sorry, where were you?
No. What you're seeing from the oil prices right now is, I mean, you know, about 2 years of, you know, oil so cheap that, you know, they almost couldn't afford, they almost could afford to give it away. You know, so price of oil has gotten to where it's stable at this point, but, and production is still up, but I think the prices that you're seeing are them, you know, basically trying to stabilize the price from, you know, having it bottom out for a year.
Or make some savings for the next round of exploration like they usually do, you know. And every
right.
so often they go out and explore and find about 10 years worth of oil, and then they stop exploring and they just, you know, just bank money for several years, you know. Gene's on the line too, and Gene has to leave at a certain point in the show as well. So Gene, if you have a question, feel free to leap in. I think our first half hour was insane today. We had callers. We had Kyle checked in from California. I wanted to hear about what's happening out there. Does that election have any, now that I think about it, does that have any impact? Because California economy is huge. And the fact that you've got, basically a Marxist nephew of Nancy Pelosi, who herself, anyway, is that going to affect the national economy much, do you think? With the same,
I don't believe
you know,
so.
Party in power? Okay.
I don't believe so. You know, I mean, while they are a big portion of the economy, I don't think that you're going to see any negative impacts from it.
Okay. Well, that's good, you know, because maybe if they have more impact, if they could do more positive things, like agriculture is still huge. I mean, it was like a quarter of our food comes from California, or maybe more than that, and they're still not irrigating. They're sending their 30-foot snowpack from the Sierras, you know, out the Golden Gate Bridge into the Pacific Ocean, which, quite frankly, folks, already has enough water. It doesn't need more, but the farmers do. And the fact that we could take that snow and turn it into food and they're not doing it is just insane. So I think maybe the impact of California is the lack of an economy that you can't see. I mean, how much more could they do if they actually managed it properly? You know, and if all the productive people weren't leaving, you know, like we were talking about with Kyle, I was just wondering if the election impact had a lot to do with the fact that, you know, Republicans, conservatives, you know, real Americans, you know, Billy Bob, who doesn't want the electric pickup, moved out. And what you're left with is illegal aliens, guilty rich white people, and homeless folks, and that's about it. I mean, the difference between rich and poor in California is huge and getting bigger.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a problem. I mean, I've seen articles that say the production of one vehicle is like seven times the carbon footprint of, you know, a gas vehicle.
The electric ones?
You know,
yeah.
An electric vehicle. Yeah. You know, so. You know, the initial impact on the environment, you know, so the seven times would imply that it would take 7 years for a gas vehicle to equal what it to strip mine and build the batteries and do everything it did for an electric vehicle. You know, but, you know, everybody's just all for, you know, hey, this is going to save the environment. You know, I mean, I think, you know, rather than jumping straight into that, there could be a happy balance, but you know, that's very, very hard to find nowadays.
Yeah. Are utilities making more money as we move to more of an electric transportation system? Because, you know, you don't buy oil, you don't buy petroleum from your oil company. You're buying electricity for your car now, as well as you're buying electricity for your house now, as well as you're buying electricity for damn near everything. We've talked about this before, but the utilities, which are government regulated, which means they can pay people off, you know, are an incredibly, they're an ever increasing position of power. If you don't pay for your electric bill, not only does it take your house out, it takes your car out too, which I find interesting.
Yeah. You know, I don't know the answer to that. I mean,
okay.
I'd have to do research. That's something I just don't.
Well, we can watch it.
I
yeah.
didn't look directly
yeah.
into.
That's my impossible
I mean,
question
I know
for today.
Some of the utility stocks are good stocks to own. Because they are constantly growing. You know, you've got big companies that are stable and provide good dividends, and then you've got other utility companies that are just kind of like more growth that you get a little bit of a dividend and continuous growth out of.
Yeah, and it makes sense too. And I think the more we move to an all electric, you know, we used to have natural gas stoves. I think those are being cut back. The fact that cars are, you know, you plug your car into your house, which I imagine takes a huge amount of power, and the disconnect that somehow people think electricity, oh, it's clean, it's wonderful, there's no pollution. Well, that's nonsense, because what's still powering those power plants is coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear. Those are your choices right now for major power generation, unless there's some new form that I haven't heard of yet. You know, I don't think we have, you know, hydrogen fusion or some of the other things that might be wonderful, but they're not here yet. So there's the disconnect. And that, and we can talk about the batteries in a minute too, but, you know, are people seeing that at all, or is it, you know, what do you think is happening? And this isn't an economic question so much as, I guess, more cultural than anything else, that people, the disconnect, that somehow electric, anything electric is good, and anything, you know, oil-based is bad, which is nonsense.
Yeah, so I mean, people don't look at it that way. I mean, there just seems to be like another silent push for nuclear power again, and they have, you know, new reactors that they're using a chemical called thorium, you know, which you know, its byproduct is salt, and you know, or what is it? I'm sorry, it's like fluoride salt, which is, you know, that is not like is nearly toxic and bad if they had some type of issue, but it still produces perpetual power and it's like cheap energy. So I think that's where everybody wants to start going, is re-exploration into nuclear power, you know, and start doing that. Yeah. So I mean, I've seen tons of stuff on there. I mean, if you like Google thorium, you know, you'll get more than you want on it. You know, what advancements are happening with it or what's moving forward, you know, I'm not real sure, but, you know, I think there's only like two or three nuclear power plants still left in the U.S. or something like that.
No, I think it's more than that. At least I hope so. Are there any in Florida? I mean, there should be.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but
you don't have to know all the answers. I just ask the questions, you know, and a lot of times, you know, the questions themselves cause us to do research, and that's where a lot of it, I mean, nobody's, I don't ask easy questions. And so because I challenge myself in doing that, but yeah, I don't know of any nuclear, plants of Florida.
James, there's a weird statistic. Yeah. There's still quite a bit of them. You know, there was a weird statistics I saw that like maybe three of them or something that are operating off of old technology or something. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah. Well, let me ask Gene, if you have a chance, Gene, I know you're not with your regular computer, but if you can look up how many active nuclear plants there are in the United States right now, I would be very curious. I think New York just closed one up the Hudson River.
Yeah, it says 56. I looked it up.
Oh, you got it already? Okay. All right.
Oh, it says the United States has 94 operating commercial nuclear reactors at 56 nuclear power plants in 28 states.
Okay.
You know, so might have been when I was reading up on the thorium stuff that there was like three of them or something that operated off of, or were very old or were going to burn out or something like that. I can't remember what it was. So maybe bad number.
And these are all built before computers, folks. If you ever look at a nuclear reactor control room, it's all gauges. it's like your old airplanes before GPS. Okay, and so it's a fascinating thing. We need the technology to catch up. But the one of the big things is lithium for these lithium electric car batteries. A lot of lithium comes from Afghanistan. You know, has that hit the market yet?
I don't. It's not a lot.
Okay.
One of the companies, Ali Marble, or hold on a second. I got to pronounce the name of it. Albemarle is the biggest lithium miner in the world.
Mm-hmm. Which country
are
they from?
I think their mine is South America, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you in a second. I'm trying to shoot.
Okay.
And we actually have one in the U.S. as well. And the name of the company for that one is Livent. You know, so they actually focus more on the production on, you know, of the lithium and what it does, not just the raw material. So I don't know that they're strip mining in the U.S. for lithium, but...
Well, I don't think you can strip mine anymore in the U.S. Maybe certain gravel places, but I think lithium, any rare metal, precious metal, or what are they called, rare earth metals or things like that, that's a whole different thing. I think they have to be much more careful.
Chile, that's what it is. Chile.
Chile. Yeah, don't trust their avocados. They're not as good as Mexican ones. Anyway, sorry, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, one of the main mines, the largest mines, is in Chile.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, certainly it's a global economy. In fact, everyone was talking about some new technology. I don't even know if you've heard about this, and I haven't even researched it yet. But someone's developing the battery gurus. You know, they found a way to make solid batteries instead of having liquid cells, you know, where the nickel cadmium things sit in water, whatever it is, that like waterless batteries that are going to be huge for car batteries. So the technology in batteries is about to make a huge quantum leap. Have you heard anything about that at all?
I have, actually. I saw a thing that they had this battery that was like the size of your pinky fingernail.
Oh, wow.
You know, that like supposed to last like 7 years. And it had like enough power to power. It was like a large thing, like a refrigerator or something like that.
What?
You know, I mean, it was something ridiculous. For like
What's
7 years. The problem that they were having with them was volatility of them. You know, about 30% of them were like melting down and causing, you know, like.
Okay, so they got a few bugs to work out, but that's promising.
Yeah.
That sounds very promising.
No, but it was really interesting because it was a solid state self-perpetuating battery that basically it the power that it had the ability to produce was astronomical, but the power that it used by itself was like minute. And the refrigerator might be a stretch of what it was. It might have been like a microwave or something like that.
Well, it doesn't
some
matter.
Type of
thing that small that powers something that powerful, that big, that's huge. That's
right.
An amazing technological development. Yeah.
Anyway, it's the technology's not completely there yet, but they were basically saying that they were having, they had this thing that had, you know, these huge light bulbs in it, and they hooked it up to it, and it was like powering the light bulbs like as bright as they possibly could be. You know, it was kind of a neat thing. They had like a video on it, and then it talked about the negative things and whatnot. I think it's something I saw on YouTube.
Yeah, here's the future. If you ever want to start a company, and in fact I'll toss this out to anybody. With electric cars, they don't sound like anything. As far as I know, they're pretty much silent. So back to Billy Bob and the pickup. I think I'm onto something here. There is going to be a company, and it's not going to be that long in coming, that makes artificial car noise. It's going to make artificial engine sounds both inside and outside the vehicle. And so your electric muscle car is going to sound like, you know, a 61 Corvette. Or a GTO. It's just going to happen. They may even be doing it already for electric cars.
They are. Yeah.
They are.
I saw a thing that said the Tesla S Plaid, was like that's like their super high performance one, has speakers in the wheel wells under the front of the engine and in the back. And you can like mimic like a Lamborghini. You can mimic like a Dodge SRT, the super awesome fast Challenger they have. Like they've got like 10 different sounds you can like, you know, sound it.
Well, see, and I thought it was original just now. That's fascinating though. But it makes sense because people want what they want. And I actually wouldn't care if I had an electric car that sounded like a 61 Corvette. Of course, I'd rather have a 61 Corvette. But even if my 61 Corvette had an electric engine in it because the government required that all gasoline engines be tossed, which they probably will one day, you know, but if it sounded cool, I'm fine with that. I don't really care. I'm not a Puritan so much that I have to have, you know, a carburetor, you know, to have fun driving a car. I just want it to look like a 61 Corvette with an electric engine that sounds like a 61 Corvette. That might be our future.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I'm sure it is. But, Greg, I gotta step out here, man. Sorry to cut short.
No, don't worry about it. No, listen, I appreciate your time, as much time as you have, you know, because I love our conversations on Friday. It's really well worth it. But, let's talk next week, and we shall carry on.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
Thanks very much. There you go. Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Services. And if you missed his phone number and, you know, and any other information, you know, check with the podcast usually about 5 minutes after 9. So 5 minutes after the show ends, we have that. Gene, we've got about 7 minutes before Jim Dykes gets here. And Michael's left us. So hopefully he'll call back when Chappie's on. But But I don't want our people to get our Chappies confused. There's two Chappies. There's a famous Chappie who was a black general, Air Force, and then they name a bridge after him here. So I'm going to talk to Chappie about that if he ever gets mistaken for the other Chappie, which should be interesting. Anyway, Gene, we haven't had a chance to talk to you all morning. Well, once.
Yeah, pretty amazing show. I'm driving, so it may be a little loud. But yeah.
Okay. No, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, very good information.
Yeah. See, if you had an electric vehicle, you'd be okay. You could turn down the artificial sound. You know, you turn down the Billy Bob sound.
Right. You know, I was always amazed, though, with – and I want – you know, I'm on that – you know, I'm conscious about what I do because I think about how it's going to affect the next generation. But it never made sense to me when they everybody's pushing these electric cars. And my idea is, what's happening with all the batteries? Because the batteries don't last a whole long time. And so then what? Then we're going to have, what, acres and acres of batteries that are just laying on the ground like they do now with cars that are no longer being used? It's just amazing. It's just, you know, I don't understand where the common sense is or where people lose it because how do the batteries come? They just don't fall out of the sky. They have to be made.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the problems, strip mining and, workers are dying of poisoning. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was going to say, and the electric has to be generated for them to run.
Mm-hmm. And also the transmission lines lose about 10-15% of their power as electricity goes, you know, down the transmission lines. That's why you hear that crackling whenever you ride your bike by a transmission line, which I used to do. There's a power generating station on my bike ride in California, and you go by any power line. That little crackly noise, that's electricity escaping, okay? Because none of these lines are 100% insulated. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean,
right.
This is why oil pipelines are actually better, because 100% of the oil goes through. Now, oil, you know, petroleum engines, gasoline engines, the internal combustion engine is not a particularly efficient way to do anything. I mean, it's really not. And I'm sure the electric engines are far more efficient, but the cost of making the electric motor and the cost of making especially the batteries offsets a lot of the benefits that you get from the fact that it's newer and very good technology. So I'm going to get an electric 61 Corvette. Sounds like a 61 Corvette. You know, when I hit that accelerator, I want to hear noise, man. I don't care if it's artificial or, you know, I can't tell. The speakers are so good now, I probably can tell the difference between artificial speaker noise and a real engine. Unless it vibrates the car, too. Sorry, I'm having too much fun today. All right, we got a few minutes. Let me, I got about 3 minutes before Jim gets here. Let me see if I get enough time for another one of my many articles here. This one's short. This one, I think, will be very instructive of what's going on. This was an experiment that was done. This is in the World Tribune. Okay, so World Tribune, which is worldwide internet magazine. It's editor 2. I guess they're kind of, you know, hidden on who they are. September 13th. And the title is Unexpected and Heartbreaking. Thousands flood ABC affiliates' Facebook page with vaccination horror stories. So we're back to our forbidden information. I think I posted this, but I'm not sure. I'll have to check. Anyway, World Tribune staff, September 13th of this year. This is an ABC News fishing expedition on Facebook. A startling turn over the weekend after a reporter asked readers to share stories of loved ones who died of COVID after refusing or delaying to get a vaccine. So it's a setup, right? They want to see how many people have died. You know, basically, they're trying to prove that not getting a vaccine will kill you, all right? Here's what happened, though. Is this instead, thousands of readers reported loved ones who died after vaccination, and even worse, from adverse reactions to the vaccine. So this is ABC affiliate WXYZ-TV Detroit posted. It says, after the vaccines were available to everyone, did you lose an unvaccinated loved one to COVID-19? If you're willing to share your family story, please, I guess that's direct message, us, your contact information. We may reach out for a story we're working on. And it says, by noon on Monday, the Post received over 39,000 angry and often heartbreaking responses. Virtually every string contains a firsthand report by people whose family members are grieving the loss of loved ones of all ages. It says, typical of the many of the responses, one woman wrote poignantly, it says, lost my mom 10 days after she got the second Pfizer jab. She couldn't swallow or talk correctly the very next day, was hospitalized, and basically never woke up again. Was sent home on hospice after 5 days in the hospital and died at home 2 days later. Another grieving daughter posted, "My daughter, 33 years old, died 10 days after getting the shot. She had an enlarged heart. She had a terminal lung disease, pulmonary hypertension. She couldn't have got, you know, she couldn't have gotten the shot." It says Pfizer only first shot, and this is from Bath, New York. Another one here says, "My son's classmate lost her mother from heart complications due to the vaccine." And there's another one, "No, but I know a teenager hospitalized myocarditis, that's swelling of the heart, the day after the second Pfizer shot." And there's more of these. I mean, there's more I could read, but you get the idea that these media people are so driven by their obsession to either toe the line, toe the narrative. They're not even questioning it. And hey, these people at ABC got caught. Now, you didn't hear that in the national news, but you should have. I'm surprised One American News didn't report it. But there you've got the situation where, you know, they're reporting. And then so they asked for stories. They didn't get the stories they want, so they didn't publish them. But it's just amazing how many people are speaking out. And this is going to come out. It's going to happen sooner or later, that this is going to be out there, that people are going to realize how dangerous these, you know, as they call it, shooting up with messenger RNA shots really are, or getting the spike proteins into your system to get those blood clots and everything else going.
Well, it's,
Gene, we got Jim on the line, so go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's known that a lot of children are getting, you know, inflamed hearts and stuff, and mm-hmm. heart issues because of the vaccine. It's like, I don't know why any, I guess I was going to say, I don't know why any parent would want to get their child vaccinated when you don't know the longstanding effects of it, considering they're young. They have their whole life ahead of them. They don't have children. You don't know mm-hmm. what that's going to do to their children, grandchildren, whatever. And it's like, and it's the chance of dying from it. And granted, you don't want to be the parent that loses someone from COVID. But the bottom line is this: it can happen anyway. They can die from the flu, whatever. It just doesn't make any sense. And yeah, there's a lot of people that the truth is not coming out about the vaccines and the, you know, people that are dying or get really sick. And I think that's horrible too, because it don't make any sense. How many people are dying from the vaccine compared to dying from actual COVID? And I'm talking, they were healthy beforehand, got COVID and died. Because if you look at it, you know, a lot of people that die from COVID, what other comorbidities or other medical issues did they have that the COVID just put them over the edge? And well, would they have lived another week, another month, 2 months? Who knows? We don't know that. But the thing is to say, oh, yes, everybody needs to get the vaccine. Well, if everybody needs to get the vaccine, or, well, not even that. If you look at how many people got the vaccine, mm-hmm. you should not have this high of cases. And the cases are even worse than last year. So what's causing that? Last year, we did not have a vaccine.
Well, if you listen to Dr. Judy Mikovits, she says that the vaccine is the disease. It's the same spike proteins that Mike Adams talked about, that it's the spike proteins that are killing people. You know, there is no COVID virus that's actually been identified. There's no one that's actually isolated SARS-CoV-2. And so there it is. This is what it looks like. The disease is the spike proteins, and the spike proteins are the things that are breaking off when your body, you know, is taught by messenger RNA, which is instructions to your DNA to make these spike proteins. So actually making the thing that kills you, you know, and these spike proteins clump together. They cause your red blood cells to clump together. And this is what's destroying organs and causing diseases in people all over the world. And people don't realize this. You know, in fact, those of us that, you know, got through COVID very well, I had it way back January 2020. Jim's on the line, so I'll get to Jim in just a second. But the thing is that we now have to take either hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, or quercetin, which is the non-prescription form of hydroxychloroquine, also vitamin D3, vitamin C, and zinc to protect ourselves from the spike proteins that are being shed from the vaccinated people. It's like secondhand COVID, just like secondhand smoke. The people who are, quote, vaccinated, who have been shooting up messenger RNA, as I say, are shedding those spike proteins. So they're actually spreading the disease from the shot they got. A lot of people don't know that. Anyway, one more comment, then I'm going to get to Jim, and then I'll give you one of the articles I'm not going to have time to read today, it looks like.
Yeah, I don't even have any more comments. I'll just keep them to myself. It's so disheartening that people are believing all this stuff. It's like, we need to wake up. We really need to wake up and start seeing the truth of what's going on and exposing the people that are just doing it for their own means or their own, whatever they want, versus what's really best and what's really the truth.
Yeah. If anybody wants to read the article, a great article, it's in the website Medical Kidnap, August 24th, 2020. The best articles were written last year, not this year. This year it's all sanitized. The article is Scandal. Anthony Fauci has been mass murdering people for decades, prevented AIDS patients from receiving life-saving, cheaper drug. Okay, you want to look at that story too, because Anthony Fauci has a long history of killing people. And I'll stand by that statement. I got a statement. There's an article by Dr. Harvey Risch that's also in Newsweek that talks all about this. I've been looking for the – oh, there's Bactrim. That's the name of the drug. So real quick story. These New York doctors with AIDS patients, they were doing research, and they found that this drug Bactrim really was successful in curing AIDS, or at least, you know, rendering it ineffective in the body. And Fauci didn't want that. He wanted AZT, because AZT was a lot more expensive. Does that sound familiar to anybody? That's exactly what's going on. All right, let's talk guns. Let's get Jim on, our second veteran reporter. We got three veteran reporters. We got Donnie, we got Jim, we got Derek. Derek's already been. Now it's Jim's turn, and I'll be right back.
Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle, 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio.
Yeah, Jim, welcome to the busiest Friday Action Radio show I think we've ever had. We're all over the place today. We've got more callers. We've got Kyle checked in from California. I've got articles that I can't possibly post on Facebook, but I'm happy to tell you the titles and things if you missed any of them, or just catch them on the podcast. We have Chappie, who's going to join us afterwards, Donnie Chapman, who is another veteran, 27-year Air Force veteran. We've got you as a veteran. We have Derek as a veteran. So this is like all Veteran Friday. I'm excited. I think it's great to have you all on. So, yeah, your turn. Number two reporter, what's going on?
Well, it's
Second Amendment. It's
good to be here as always on a Friday. So actually quite a bit is going on, and I figure we'll start in Florida. And Representative Anthony Sabatini out of Lake County has filed.
Oh, he's been on the show.
Three.
He's been on the show. Yeah, I'm a big fan. Yeah.
Filed three pro-gun bills. House Bill 6007 is a bill that would allow for campus carry. House Bill 6013 basically repeals the Stoneman-Douglas Act. So that's the whole thing.
That's constitutional, though, isn't it?
It goes through line by line. It took me a while to read through all of it and to realize that he actually was just going through and repealing everything that Stoneman Douglas put into law.
Okay. So, I want to go over that with you a little bit. Yeah.
That's a long one. That will take a long time for you to read through and parse through. And then House Bill 103 that he's filed would establish constitutional carry in Florida. So
this is a good
three
day.
Very strong pro 2A bills. Now the downside.
Oh, come on, you're on a roll, Jim. Jim, you got me in a good mood. Don't do it. Just skip the downside. Just forget it this week. I'm happy. I don't even want to talk about it. All right, go ahead.
As of today, there are no companion bills in the Senate. So without a companion bill, the bills won't go anywhere. So I hope that Representative Sabatini is working over on the Senate side to find a sponsor of companion bills for these bills.
There isn't one decent senator. Are they under the thumb of the Senate president, like the House and Congress is under the thumb of Nancy Pelosi? Does the leader of the Senate have sway as to what gets into committee and gets passed and sent to the floor?
So the leadership in the House and Senate definitely control what gets brought up and passed in committee and brought up to the floor.
Okay.
They don't really control what gets filed. You can file these bills. Once there is a companion bill in the Senate, then individual voters can start pressuring their representatives who are on the first stop committee for these bills to have them brought up in committee.
Senators can bring up any amount of bills they want, right? Senators can bring up any amount of bills they want, but House members are only limited to six, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's the number.
Okay.
And those are bills that they are the actual sponsor of.
Okay.
So they can be a co-sponsor who's not the actual sponsor of the bill on multiple ones, but ones that they actually draft and submit as a sponsor. That's where their limit falls in.
Okay. I'm going to try and get him back on the show. I've been talking to his campaign person. He's running for Congress, and he's been on the show a couple times before, but we never had a really big chance to chat because the time was limited. But I want to get him back here because he's running for Congress, and we've got a couple of bills that I'm hoping he'll take to Congress and run on. And this would be a first to have, you know, people running on citizen legislation. In fact, I want to trade him for our bill here in Santa Rosa County, which is doing quite well right now, to create an illegal alien-free zone of Santa Rosa County using asset forfeiture, a local law enforcement tool, as a way to seize stuff from illegal aliens so they don't come here. And this is going to be a model for the whole country. Every county could do this, and then we could funnel the illegal aliens into the sanctuary cities where they don't have any laws.
Right.
Yeah, so that's how I go. But I want to be able to talk to him about that, see if he'll sponsor that, and I just want to talk about his bills. I don't mean like a quid pro quo kind of thing, but just the fact that we have bills that he could help advance, and I certainly want to advance the bills that he wants to get going too. And I could talk to other state legislators about it. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Campus Carry?
And the three bills,
go ahead.
I've read through them quickly, and from a first read through, all of them look very good. Definitely support them. I haven't done a deep dive because, as you know from conversations we've had before, sometimes there are things when someone tries to draft a very good bill that do bad things because of the way the language is drafted. So I haven't done that deep dive, but
okay.
You know, those are things that are easy to fix with amendments.
Words count.
By and large, those three bills are very, very strong 2A bills, and definitely support those.
Okay. Do we have time to go over the main points briefly, or did you want to cover something else?
I mean, the main points are kind of, you know, what I said. The campus carry bill basically will allow you with your concealed carry permit to carry a firearm on college and university campuses throughout the state. The repeal of Stoneman Douglas Act, I mean, you can go through everything.
That's the main point.
Takes away the restriction on the 18 to 21-year-olds from purchasing firearms. It does away with extreme risk protection orders. It just goes down the laundry list of those things that were put in Stoneman Douglas. And then the constitutional carry basically provides for unlicensed, open, and concealed carry within the state of Florida and establishes a license that you can get to be used for reciprocity in other states that require you to have a license. So that's kind of the basics of the three.
Okay, yeah, that's good. I never like the term license because it implies that the government has the ability to license. And it's really, you know, if you look at the Constitution, constitutional carry means that we're getting rid of all the stuff that the government, you know, can't do. They can't, you know, have us ask them permission to do this, you know? And so we would need a better term than unlicensed. You know, I would say constitutionally compliant or something like that.
Yeah. The problem that you run into is most of those states in their statute require you to have a license or permit from your state. And those are the words that are in their statute. So if you have something that's not a license or a permit, then you're not allowed to carry in their state.
Okay.
So
well, and that makes sense.
I don't know that permit is a better name than a license because I hate even more thinking that the government is permitting me to do something.
Oh, okay. See, I think license is even worse because I go with the driver's license. You know, we have a right to travel but not a right to drive. And if driving isn't traveling, I don't know what it is. So, we'll get into our legal, you know, semantical nitpicky stuff because we're nerds that way. It's really kind of fun. But if we can, you know, like I said, I'm very interested in the words that are used to frame arguments because it makes a difference. You know, in other words, the same, the government gives you permission to do this. We're saying, well, the government has no right to require you to do this. It's the same thing, but it's a completely different way. You know, I mean, polls are that way too. It all depends on how you ask the question. So if we can say we're bringing Florida into compliance with the Constitution by doing away with, you know, illegal government restrictions and having people do what they could do naturally, which is, you know, own and carry firearms, that's a whole different argument than, well, we're sort of, you know, making it, we're taking away the government's ability to issue licenses and permits to protect the public from, you know, unlicensed people carrying firearms. I mean, it's the same thing, but it's said two completely different ways. And it brings about a completely different reaction. You know, do you want a nasty assault weapon or would you like to have a freedom rifle? Same gun.
Right.
You know, completely different. I just created two, you know, diametrically opposed images in your head. That's how easy it is. That's why words matter. Anyway.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, sir. What do we
got? So the second thing, I figure I'll hit very close to home for you. And you may have heard this, you may not have heard, but the Panhandle chapter of Crime Stoppers in Panama City is holding a month-long fundraiser where they are going to team with a gun range called the Powder Room in Panama City Beach. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not.
No,
I was
not,
so I had to go look them up. But the Powder Room and the Panhandle chapter of Crime Stoppers are going to raffle off 30 guns in 30 days to raise money for Panhandle Crime Stoppers, which I think is taking Crime Stoppers to a whole new level because in addition to raising the money, you're also giving 30 law-abiding citizens firearms to allow them to stop crime themselves.
That's a, that'd be a great campaign in itself. Buy a firearm, stop, help stop crime. You know, we should, in fact, I was looking, well, you know, it's funny, I'm going to talk to Chappie about this when he gets on the line, you know, at the bottom of the hour, but I was thinking if we could get our gun stores together here in Santa Rosa County, we could form our own little gun lobby. But now I'm thinking, well, we should get the Powder Room and the Crime Stoppers. I'm not really familiar with Crime Stoppers, and so I'm curious as to how it works, you know, how they do what they do. Are they mostly an information campaign, or do they actually sponsor?
So Crime Stoppers, what? For the most part, they raise funds and then use them. What typically happens is they work with local law enforcement, and they fund reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of wanted persons for unsolved crimes. So they fund a reward. They set up their own anonymous call-in line where you can give a tip to law enforcement through Crime Stoppers.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then they relay that information to law enforcement and then handle the giving of the reward for the arrest and conviction of someone. That's kind of, in a nutshell, what Crime Stoppers does. And they're all around the country.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've heard of them. Was that McGruff? Is that the guy? Or was that something different? When they put a dog in a trench coat, make him look like Columbo.
I don't know that McGruff is part of Crime Stoppers or not.
He did the Take a Bite Out of Crime campaign. I'm trying to think if that was Crime Stoppers or something else. Anyway, sounds like a good idea. In fact, I had an idea way back when there was more terrorism. You know, God forbid it happens again. But the idea that people could get, you know, the concealed carry owners or citizens in general could go through a background check and get like a higher level of training, get more situational awareness, more terrorist things, more stuff to look for, you know. And so they would be, you know, citizen reporters, ideally concealed carry holders, so that if an actual emergency broke out, they could deal with it. And so that was one of my ideas. Another idea I had for Donnie Chapman, who I talked to last week for the first time, is that we combine in first aid courses with concealed carry classes. Because if you actually are involved in an emergency where you have to fire your weapon, you know, people are going to get hurt or killed. But certainly, you know, first aid might be a backup thing to do, because not only can you be a concealed carry holder protecting the public from terrorists, criminals, things like that, but also you would be your own first responder because you're right there on the scene. So we're tossing around that idea too. So what do you think of that one? I'm just curious. First aid course concealed carry.
I encourage everyone who has a concealed carry permit to take first aid courses, especially with respect to trauma, treatment of trauma, and to carry, you know, at least a tourniquet and a small kind of blowout kit with you, because you know, and in addition to all of the things that you said, you know, there's mm-hmm. also a very good chance that if you use your firearm to defend yourself, you're also going to be wounded. And
yeah.
you may have to provide self-aid until the 911 first responders can arrive on the scene. So knowing how to do that becomes really important.
Yeah,
you don't want to bleed out while you're waiting on the ambulance to arrive.
Exactly, and that can happen in a fourly short time. Tourniquets, I'm not familiar with. Apparently, they were frowned upon medically for a long time because they weren't used, but now they've become much more either they're better, they're easier to use, or people understand how the body works better, that they're actually, you know, quite a viable way to stop bleeding. And so, do you have medical experience? Was that part of your training at all?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I actually was also a member of a volunteer rescue squad in Virginia when I lived there. So I've had a fair amount of medical training as well as the medical training that we got in the military. So,
do all soldiers get basic medical training or is it more selective?
In recent years, well, they've always received some first aid training. In recent years, it's become much more significant, especially trauma training. So, you know, they teach soldiers now how to start IVs, how to do needle chest decompression for a pneumothorax if someone has a collapsed lung from a pneumothorax. They do tourniquet application. They do pressure dressings and how to stop, you know, very serious blood flows and blood loss. So the first aid is significantly better than it used to be.
Oh, yeah. You think back to, you know, trench warfare. I mean, millions of soldiers died, you know, along a span of like 500 yards, you know, for 4 years. And the first aid was terrible. And so, you know, the casualties, or back to the Civil War where medicine, you know, made some quantum leaps. But if you're a soldier back then, you know, and you took a musket pretty much anywhere, you could lose arms, legs, you know, your life, obviously. But I'm just saying that the, you know, the medicine has improved so much. That'd be an interesting thing to report on, too, if you ever want to do that, that the survival rates, you know, as the wars have progressed and the amount of, you know, Vietnam was an improvement because we had helicopters and more of them. You know, each successive, you know, conflict we've been in has created greater and greater survival rates for soldiers.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely. And like you mentioned, that the helicopters were huge because for severe trauma, really the important thing is being able to get a person to a location where there is a doctor who can begin to treat them, because there's a limit on what someone who can't surgically intervene can do.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Court cases, gun of the week. Where should we go?
Yeah, so as we continue on, I figure I have to give you a bad news story since I gave you all the good news ones, because, you know, I can't let
you. Well, you gave the downside to a bill. What more are you going to do to me today?
Well, that was just a small downside to a bill.
Oh,
I mean, that wasn't
this
like
is
any
a big downside?
Bill, but, well, this one's a big downside, especially if you live in Virginia. So,
let me give you the Chinese gong then so we can alert people. This is the downside. Probably, you know, here you go. And now that you're awake, the downside. Okay, Jimmy.
Here, here we go. So this week, Michael Bloomberg and his Every Town for Gun Safety group announced that they are going to spend over $1.8 million in Virginia to try to keep anti-gun legislators and executives in office. So they're going to give $1 million to Terry McAuliffe in his run for governor.
Wait, wasn't he already governor?
And, right. Yeah, to reelect, sorry.
Well, he was governor. He's not Northam's the current governor, you know, blackface
right.
Northam.
Yeah, but when I say reelect, you put him back in office. He is making another run for Virginia governor.
Did he do one term or two terms? And I guess he's not term limited, obviously. I don't even know if they have term limits there. But
yeah, I don't know if they have term limits, and I don't know if their term limits are just on consecutive terms.
Yeah.
Or whether they're any.
Well, that's how Jerry
line.
Brown came back. Jerry Brown came back in California because
right.
his term, you know, he did his terms, but, you know, there was a term between when he ran again at a much older age. Still the same Jerry Brown, though.
Yeah, so they're going to give $1 million to him, $300,000 to split between an anti-gun person running for lieutenant governor and one running for his third term as attorney general. And then $500,000 for about a dozen anti-gun Democrats that are running for the House of Delegates in Virginia. So
yeah.
$1.8 million being pumped into anti-gun Virginia campaigns.
Yeah.
So that's
well, here's there's some good news, though. Let me get some good news to your downside. An awful lot of people are buying guns. You know, it was me to ask Derek about that. But there's so many people buying guns, and new gun owners are make up a lot of this percentage. Because, you know, a lot of us have been in the, you know, the biz for a while. You know, I don't know how many new more. I mean, I'd probably get a few more new guns, but the guns I have are great. I don't need any more for the rest of my life. I mean, I'm happy. If I never bought another gun, I'm okay. But, you know, of course, I always want more just because we always want more. But the new gun owners are going crazy out there. And there are women, and there are minorities. We've talked about this before. People, traditional Democrat constituencies, are buying guns like crazy. And gun owners are gun voters. And I don't know if anybody's really studied the impact of this, but is there a decent study to show the correlation between the rise in gun ownership among especially Democrat groups and the rise in gun voting, which means not Democrat, because they're going to take them all away if they can. Has that been looked at?
I have not seen any studies that did that.
Okay.
I will say, you know, to your point about the changing makeup of the people purchasing firearms now, most of the studies that are being done are showing somewhere just below 50% of the firearms that are being purchased now are being purchased by women, which is incredible.
Huge. But, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be, what, 10% maybe? Or I don't know what the old figures were, but it was, you know, it was Billy Bob in the pickup we talked about earlier, who's buying an electric truck with the sound speakers to make it sound like a real truck. You know, those are your gun buyers, you know, for forever. And so it's quite interesting that, yeah. In fact, it looks like I got Chappie on the line now, too. So, well, let me bring him on. Do you have another big topic in the next little bit? Okay, good.
Yeah,
let me introduce you to one more topic.
I'll get one more topic to go over, and he can jump in on that one as well.
Well, I want to introduce you to, because you know,
sure.
You are a true gun reporter. So, but let's cover your topic first, and then I'll bring on Chappie.
Okay, so the next one is a court case. I know you always love having some court cases. So this one's out of Connecticut.
Especially if we can debate them.
Well, this one actually has turned out well.
Okay.
And it has an interesting twist to it that I'll get to. So. The basic facts of the case is police officer pulled up behind a gentleman who had stopped his vehicle on the side of the road, and I'm not sure what he was doing, but he wasn't doing anything illegal. He had stopped his vehicle maybe to mess with his phone or something.
Okay, which is a good thing, actually.
Up,
yeah.
Right. The officer came up, asked him for his driver's license. Uh-huh. The gentleman who was in the car handed the officer his driver's license and his firearms permit.
Mm-hmm.
And informed the officer that he had a pistol in the driver's side door. At that point, the police officer forcibly removed this gentleman from his car, handcuffed him, put him in the back of his police car, and proceeded to search the interior of the vehicle.
Oh, that's special. This person never read the Constitution? You know,
yeah.
If guy was a criminal, he wouldn't have presented his firearms license. Criminals don't generally, people that want to do harm to police don't let you know, A, that they have a gun in the car, and B, that they have a permit, and here it is. Who is this idiot
right.
cop?
So as he searched the vehicle,
uh-huh.
He seized a handful of small pills that he suspected might be narcotics. $320 in cash,
mm-hmm.
And a thumb drive. Well,
mm.
Come to find out, the small pills that he seized were the nitroglycerin tablets that had been prescribed to the driver for his heart condition.
Heart condition, right.
And the And the thumb drive had nothing on it except photos of the driver's late father.
Wait a minute. Wait, a thumb drive doesn't present a danger to you. Why was that even included in the search? What, driving while thumb drive?
My guess is he thought that this guy might be selling narcotics, and he thought there might be information on the thumb drive about who he was selling it to. That is my guess of why he would seize it.
But initially, the search was based on a safety of
exactly.
a threat of weapons, allegedly. So
right.
that would exclude a thumb drive, unless you had problem. That would get tossed out in court immediately. Well, I assume it did. Well, let's find out what happened.
So this went to U.S. District Court for the I can't remember which district. I think it's the second district up there that Connecticut's in.
Okay.
And the police officer
Connecticut. All right, there we go.
Claimed that he had probable cause to detain the person and search the car. And even if he didn't, the case should be dismissed because of my favorite policy that I hate, qualified immunity.
Uh-huh.
So this...
In other words, I did the wrong thing, but it's okay because I'm a cop. That's basically what qualified immunity is, right?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So this district court judge, Judge Arterton, found that he absolutely had no probable cause, that there was no safety involved because
yeah.
the person voluntarily presented his carry permit, did not resist at any time, and dismissed the qualified immunity immediately because, again, there was absolutely no reason for the officer to enter the vehicle to try to do any kind of search, and that if she were to grant qualified immunity, that would mean that no firearms owner in the state of Connecticut would have any protection under the Fourth Amendment.
If you can search a car because somebody voluntarily disclosed that they have a firearm and showed you their permit, and all they were doing was pulling over to the side of the road, which is a legal thing, which is encouraged, especially if you have to mess with your phone. This cop, I don't know, was there any disciplinary action or were they just, you know, put back into the loyal order of, you know, liberal cops in Connecticut?
I assume that there was no disciplinary action taken, but now that he has been stripped of qualified immunity, he's subject to a civil case as well.
Ooh.
But it will still have to go to, I'm sure that the county or city will appeal this to the Court of Appeals. So we'll see what they do.
Yeah.
But the interesting twist to this is the mm-hmm. judge who gave this great decision was actually a Bill Clinton appointee. So finding
well, Bill Clinton
Clinton
did something right.
Great pro 2A ruling is really surprising for me.
Yeah. Well, now, think about it. I'm going to make Chappie's line live here. First of all, let me introduce you to Jim Dykes, Donnie Chapman. Donnie, do you want to call you Chappie or Donnie? What works for you?
No, Chappie's fine.
Okay, that sounds good. So this is our All Veteran Friday. I discovered by accident this morning because Derek Park, our financial advisor, I think Army, Jim, you're Army also, and Chappie's Air Force. And so this is our All Veteran Reporter Friday. But I want to get you two guys together because Florida Carry and I think Donnie's store might have a lot of things that we can do. But Donnie, do you have any reaction to this case here? Do we have anything comparable, you know, in the Panhandle in Florida, or are cops pretty good about this kind of thing? I suspect
Good. They're really, really good around here, especially mm-hmm. definitely in Santa Rosa County. So they're pretty mm-hmm. pro 2A. And, you know, in fact, like I said, if you show your CCW, you know, you're letting them know, hey, I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I'm giving you forewarning, they're going to treat you with a lot more respect. So.
Yeah. Rumor has it, and I've had this kind of by actual officers, you know, who serve under Sheriff Johnson here, that he does regular patrols. He's not one of these, you know, desk sheriffs. And this is in Santa Rosa County. Uh-huh. And he's been known to yell at people if they have their concealed carry permit and are not carrying. You know, he's one of those guys, right? What do you mean you're not carrying your gun? What the hell's wrong with you? This is America. You know, how are you going to defend your family and then the citizenry if you're not carrying a gun? I mean, he's one of these guys, right? So I've had him on the show. He's wonderful. All right. I think we're going to kind of blend into Chappie's report. Do you have any time to stick around, Jim, or do you have to dash out.
No, I actually have to jump off this week.
Okay.
So I will let Chappie take off and do his thing, and he and I can tease each other offline about our branches of service, and then we'll chastise anyone else who comes in and tries to tease either of us about it.
Well, you're both in the gun group, so you guys can, you know, hash it out there so we can watch. Sounds like fun to me. But
I was Army, so I'll use very, very small words and not go very deep into anything, and I'll let Chappie handle the really heavy lifting with the mental powers.
I'll try to not articulate as much so you guys can understand it and maybe use some pictures. So.
Thank you. Crayons are great.
Well, we need some Marines on the show for that. So
we got to schedule an hour for both of you. I think if you could both start at 8 o'clock some morning Central Time, Jim. If you ever get some extra time, let me know. I'll just run you two together, and I'll just sit back and listen. This is gonna be fun.
Sounds good. We'd love that.
All right, Jim. Thank you so much. Have a great week, and let's talk again next week.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it.
All right. You take care. All right, so Jim Dykes is the director of Florida Carry, trying to bring about constitutional carry, open carry in the state of Florida. And I think that you two, first of all, get along fabulously, and secondly, could do some work together, because if Chappie, if you can get more involved with Florida Carry, I think that would be a wonderful thing for us, this area. And, just the whole idea of getting the Constitution complied with, you know, and for nothing else.
Oh, okay.
Do you have a reaction to that case and the cops at all before we get into your stuff?
I'd have to look into it a little bit more, but it's pretty wrong in my book as far as, you know, what the law enforcement officer did. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't have a theme for you yet.
I mean,
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, if the law enforcement officer wasn't wearing gloves, you know, and took that guy's match or girlfriend, he probably had a nice headache afterwards. So.
Say that again? I think I missed that.
Holding, you know, that person's nitroglycerin, if he's holding it in his hand, he probably had a nice headache afterwards. So.
Oh, yeah. And that's serious stuff. Nitroglycerin, and that's the same stuff that causes explosions. Now, how it helps hearts, I don't know. I've never got the medical connection. We should get Jean had to leave us early, but hopefully we'll make that at some point. I don't have a theme for you yet because we don't have a title for your report yet. I'm thinking gun tech, but I'll leave it to you to come up with your report. But I can give you a round of applause. There you go. So welcome to the show. You're the first person that's gone from 1 hour to an instant report. So, yeah, welcome to Action Radio.
Thank you. Well, this weekend there's quite a few competitions going on with the weather holding. Tomorrow, my shooting team, Team Chappie Tactical, we are shooting in Vinegar Bend, Alabama. We're going to shoot at the MPSA PSA Club tomorrow. There's also a IDPA match at my home range at Scambia River Gun Club. There is also a Steel Challenge match if those who live further east want to go shoot in Tallahassee.
I'm writing all this down because I ask you about these. Yeah. Do you think people have any idea of just how many opportunities there are to shoot beyond the paper target of the range? Because, you know, I've been involved in some of them. But there's an entire shooting world that I think most shooters don't really know about. What do you think?
Oh, I totally agree. Especially in this area, we are pretty blessed to be so close to so many, outdoor facilities to shoot and a lot of places to compete. You know, a lot of people, especially in the Midwest and northern states, one, they're kind of limited to the time of the year they can shoot. And then I've heard people having to drive 2 to 3 hours every weekend just to shoot a match. So we're pretty blocked there.
Well, I used to do that about once a month back when I was competing. When I was really into this and I had time and money to indulge myself, I used to do 1,000-yard matches. And it was fascinating. I had a Savage 110. We get a little technical, folks. So if anybody has a question, call in 215-383-3832. I had a 24-inch barrel, and I actually shot 30-06, which everybody says, well, 308 is more accurate. But I want a little extra, you know, oomph, okay, especially for that 1,000 yards. And it was fascinating to me, long-range shooting, because at 1,000 yards, you've got about a second and a half of flight time. And I used to hand load. I mean, I would measure each powder charge. I would neck size the case. So the case is what's called fire form. So when you fire a brass case, it heats up and it actually sort of forms to the chamber of your gun, which is really good because now all the pressure is equal all around the casing inside that chamber, whereas most times ammunition is made a little bit smaller to fit those smaller chambers. And, of course, if you have a larger chamber, it doesn't work quite as well. But the point is, I fussed. You know, I had these Sierra 190-grain, you know, Botel hollow point bullets, and I even had a chronograph. I was actually measuring the speed, you know, of my rounds to get exactly the right velocity so that it was stable the longest time and would still be supersonic as long as possible downrange. And as it turned out, by sheer accident, I came up with the same exact formula with the same, you know, old-style IMR 464 powder that the world champion used in 30-06 with 190-grain Botel in 1965 or something like that. So to make a long story short, this is a lot of fun you could have. I mean, you can get into this as deeply as you want to get into it. I mean, you know, people are micro-chronographing their stuff, and it's a fascinating thing. But long-range ballistics always fascinate me because the idea that you fire something and it's on its own, and the wind, you got three different wind socks at 1,000 yards, and they're all going in different directions. Okay, you got to take that into account. And you've got gravity, and you've got the Coriolis effect, the fact that the Earth rotates and spins things, you know, north in the northern hemisphere, south in the southern. That's where the cyclonic and anticyclonic movement, all those different things, all that stuff plays at 1,000 yards. So 1,000 yards basically separate the men from the boys and the women from the girls, as far as I'm concerned, about shooting. 600 yards is pretty easy. 800, yeah, it was pretty good at 800 yards. 1,000 yards, I don't know what that extra 200 yards did, but I'll tell you.
Yeah.
What is it about that? What do you think? Have you done long range? You must have at some point.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I think a lot of it, and especially here, you know, we have the humidity too. Then we are also, like you said, playing in all the other effects. Then we're also at sea level, so that's going to play an effect, of course, in your velocity and everything.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, it you know, plays a lot. You're, you know, you're not only just using your fundamentals, you're using a little bit of calculus.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your load data and also your firearms. So it's an amazing sport. So.
Yeah, anybody
and
wants to get
that,
into it.
We
have, yeah. Go ahead.
Actually, if you want to get into it, we do have two ranges nearby, two fantastic ranges that offer 1,000-yard ranges. One is in Baker, Florida, called Altus Shooting Solutions. Mm-hmm. And we also have Element Training, that's in Holt, Florida. They were formerly known as Southern Tactical. Now they have under new ownership under Element Tactical.
Okay. So 1,000-yard range, you know, that's over a quarter mile. Let me see.
Yeah.
200. It's almost half a mile, isn't it? Because how many yards in a mile? 2,000 feet is 5,280. So divide that by. Let me get my calculator here. I'm reaching back. That's why I'm away from the microphone. That's why I sound weird right now. All right, there we go. So let's do a little quick calculation. So 5,280 feet is a mile divided by 3. 1,760. You know, yards. So it's in a mile. So yeah, that's over half a mile.
About half a mile. Yeah.
Wow. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
That you can actually fire a bullet and hit something at half. You know, hit a man-sized silhouette target at half a mile. Now, are these ranges, obviously nothing's around them. You know, because the big problem in California was they were closing them down because, well, they said the lead was, you know, infecting the groundwater.
The lead, environmental.
Yeah, the wackos, you know. But everything from noise to, well, we can't, you know. And the weird part was the deer running in the hills, you know, right above the range. They didn't seem to be bothered by it, you know. They were fine, you know. But yeah, are there any ranges in danger of closing around here, especially the 1,000-yard one?
No.
That's, okay.
No, not
that's
at
good.
All. Actually, both of them are expanding their ranges. They're adding more facilities to the range. I know Altus has a lot more land they're looking at, pushing out farther. And they actually host quite a bit precision long-range masters out there. So.
Okay. Are we on a national circuit? Are people in the top competitors in the country, do they have matches here?
So there's not that I'm aware of for the long range. I believe if they do, it's probably at Altus. I do know, however, for big national matches in the competition series for skeet and trap, Santa Rosa Shooting Center hosts those, and that's near Cantonment as well. So they have a lot of the big name players. But actually, within our community here, we do have a lot of what are considered grandmaster professional level shooters. One of them who shoots on my team, Gatlin Johnson, in Steel Challenge. He's number 20th in the world for Steel Challenge, and he's right here. He lives in Crestview. Florida, and he's in the Air Force Reserves.
Wow. So this is wonderful. So tell me about your team. You know, it's shameless plug time. This is part of the fun of being a reporter.
Yeah,
so
basically with my business, Chaffee Tactical, and then just one day I just started wanting to get out and compete, and started meeting a good group of individuals that we wanted to always kind of squad up together, and it kind of formed from that.
Mm-hmm.
And then so now everywhere, you know, we go, we kind of, you know, we squad up together, we hold ourselves accountable, and we also, you know, we're there to help motivate each other as
mm-hmm.
well. And, you know, it's like, hey, let's talk about the stage plan. How are you going to shoot it? How are you going to shoot it? And then one day shoot and field challenge, match at, Escambia River Gun Club, Gatling was out there, and he just happened to squad up with us that day. And, the cards just fell, and we all started hanging out and, offered him to shoot on our team, and been great ever since. So
yeah.
That's how
wow.
it basically started. So now we kind of all, we travel every weekend together. For instance, pretty much all of October, we're going to be on the road. We're going to be New Smyrna, Florida, for the Area 6 Steel Challenge match. So that's one of the big ones that's going on. We're also going to be in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, later that month for another big Steel Challenge match. Dothan, Alabama, in October, it's going to be called the Endless Summer Match. For USPSA, which Dothan, if nobody's been out there before, it's a beautiful range. Dan Mitchell, who owns or runs the range, is an amazing guy. Everybody calls it the Wimbledon of shooting because their shooting bays and stages are, it's like golf grass. It's groomed grass. So it's just amazing
Ooh.
To go out there. Yeah, so it's amazing. We do also have another, it's called Level 2, so it's a higher level, which we will be getting a lot of pros in. In November, there's going to be called the All 8 Steel Challenge Match, which will be held at Element in Holt, Florida. So,
yeah. Have spectators developed around this sport, people? Because I notice, you know, like you have golf, as boring as it is, there's a lot of people watch golf and they walk around and, you know, they do their thing and they hang out in the rain and they watch them do it. When I remember shooting, I don't remember, you know, spectators at all. They're, you know, and I was wondering if that's a way to get more interest in the sport. Are ranges set up for people to actually watch the competitions?
Yeah, they're absolutely set up to watch the competition. You know, of course, safety first. So as long as people come out there with their eyes and ear protection, they're allowed to. I think the good thing, too, as long as, you know, there's a lot of advertising, as long as the range is advertising, hey, we're having this, come out and at least watch. And as long as everybody kind of promotes the sport, I think you're going to get a lot more spectators because, and then what we also tell people is like, hey, just bring your stuff. Just bring your stuff because as soon as you watch the first stage, you're going to want to shoot.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's a lot more spectators, and then I think what happens, you know, somebody brings a friend, they're shooting the next weekend, they bring a friend, and it just keeps adding on. But yeah, there is quite a few spectators that then come out and then turn into competitors. So
yeah. So what sports does your team do?
Basically, so we practice together. We also help start up our new USPSA club, Escambia River Practical Shooters. So we're all coming, you know, a bunch of great minds coming together to figure out, hey, what kind of stages do we want to develop? How do we want to run our match? We also, Gatlin Johnson has been asked several times, and he's going to start actually giving lessons for people how to shoot Steel Challenge. He mentors one of our junior shooters in USPSA as well. So that's basically what we're kind of doing. We're competitive, but we're friendly, and we kind of, you know, we always tell everybody, hey, squad up with us. We always kind of squad up on squad three. We call ourselves the squad three misfits. So we're very we're very open to anybody new or experienced to come shoot with us because, like I said, we have a good time. We're competitive, but we like to have fun. You know, we want to make it fun and not too serious and want everybody to come back again. So that's basically what we just kind of try to send out a positive message. And then that, you know, enhances and enforces the Second Amendment right there.
Oh yeah, there's nothing friendly than a gun competition. I mean, everybody's trying to help each other. Where, you know, the real competition's against yourself. It's completely different.
Yeah.
I got a caller I got a surprise for you. I got a caller who was on earlier with us, Michael, from Navarre.
Oh, yeah.
And so, first of all, thank you for sharing our show. And Michael, you're on with Jappy. So, welcome back to the show. Still got noise
yes,
in the background.
No,
though.
I wanted to. hopefully the phone perception's a little bit better
that is
now
better.
Than when I was driving by the earlier.
Yeah. No, you're fine.
But I just wanted to call in, like, you know, what they're doing is such an awesome thing. And he was talking about Gatlin. I've been on the range where my gun has broke before, and Gatlin has, like, tried to, you know, give me a piece from his own equipment to be able to compete. You know, I think that they, Chappie actually, his father let me borrow his gun to finish the competition because my ejection pin just busted and my gun wasn't able to, you know, be fixed out at the range. But, you know, they help out so much, and, you know, with shooting PCP, that's just a different element. And, you know, one of the things
you
that
you explain PCP
is,
so people don't think you're, you know.
PCP,
that's the pressurized guns that we use in the Paralympics and the Warrior Games. And okay. It shoots 0.177 caliber. And, you know, they've helped me out with my sighting for that and getting prepared for those matches. And some of the people that shoot at the range, even though they may not be Team Chappie tactical, so to speak, you have Mr. Brown and Mr. Rowe out there that are, I think, number one and two in the state of Florida that have years and years of shooting experience that are willing to help other people out and let them know, hey, this is what you need to do here to be more accurate, or, you know, hey, calm down your breathing a little bit. Because a lot of the things that we do in shooting, if we just get down the sequence of breathing properly, it'll let us shoot so much more accurately. And that's one of the things, you know, knowing Chappie and knowing, like, Gatlin, what they do out there is they try to help us and help us reach our potential. And, you know, for stuff that, for people that are really experienced shooters, it's not about winning every event sometimes. It's just about improving every event. So that's where capturing those people that may not have a background in shooting that are interested in the sport, you have the perfect people here, like with Chappie Tactical, to introduce them to the sport and get them to know the basics, which sometimes even the most advanced shooters, we need to go back to the basics to get more accurate. So,
well, you get so good,
I just
you
wanted
forget.
To call in.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to you're welcome to stay the rest of the show. We've only got about 9 minutes left. But I just want to caution both of you. I'm just a little hesitant to mention names of people just in the interest of privacy. Unless they're public figures, they're nationally ranked. You know, they're publicly known anyway as shooters, just in case. You know, so I want to just caution. We can talk about folks. But you're welcome, like, you know, Gatlin especially. It sounds like he's pretty public. I'd love to have him on the show. And so I'm just a little bit cautious about that, just in the interest of privacy, because people want to be able to go to the range, and if they want to be anonymous, I don't want to necessarily mention them here, unless the person want to come on the show and be guests, in which case, you know, hey, that's why I don't do last names, you know, with callers until, you know, unless you want to release that yourself, but that's a good thing. Okay, this is very cool. This is a fun day. The most important thing for people who are new and who are listening, how do they get, are you going to offer a class? Because I got some people interested, and I want to take it myself. So like a refresher or an intro class to competition. Chappie, are you setting something up with that? Should they contact you?
So,
what do they need to do? Yeah.
Yeah, so since we're going to start our first USPSA match starting in January, and then we're going to kind of take a poll and then kind of gather up, say, you know, who's here interested in, like, intro to competition shooting, and we'll probably base it more off USPSA.
Okay.
And it could be even a refresher for people who are experienced, but it'll basically go over a course first, safety first, and then we'll talk about the equipment, the different divisions, goals to start progressing. So yeah, it'll probably in the next several months, we'll have a class, and then I'll promote it here on the show, and then also through social media. It'll probably be an intro to competition shooting that we'll hold at Escambia River Gun Club.
Okay. Yeah, because people are interested. I know the basic rules. I know the, how the competitions work, but I need to make sure I haven't picked up a bad habit because I haven't been shooting, you know, for a while. And so for me, it'd be, perfect thing that you forget things, you know, and I noticed that anything, you know, it's funny that I relate guitar playing to shooting to, you know, sailing. I used to race sailboats with a friend of mine to any place you're in the zone. And there's certain things that can put you in a zone. And especially, you know, the beautiful thing about shooting and some of these other things is that it takes you away from everything else that's going on in the world. These are, you know, flying. I used to teach flying too. And so when you're doing your activity in your zone and you've excluded everything else, you know, a lot of times these things, they require 100% participation. And that's the beauty of it. So shooting is one of those things where it can exclude everything else. It should exclude everything else. And you get to participate 100% in it. But as much as you do that, there are still basics. There's still fundamental things that you need to know, you know, when your finger goes on the trigger and where the muzzle has to be at all times. And it's easy to forget those just little things. And all of a sudden you're doing something and say, wait a minute, you know, gee, I didn't do that last month, or, you know, or whatever it was, you know, I didn't do it during my last lesson, you know, a year ago, but you've been shooting for a year. So now it's like, oh, you know, you don't know what you picked up, you know, along the way or what you've forgotten. And that's why it's always good to have a refresher class. Yeah. Yeah.
And exactly. Or you know all the pieces. It's sometimes putting those, it's like a puzzle, you know, but putting those pieces of puzzles together. Like, for instance, with Michael, in which we've known each other for 20 years. We've flown aeroback together, and we were in the Air Force together. But Michael,
you fly still?
Fundamentals.
Did you fly still?
This is before we retired. No, not anymore.
Okay. You said you flew aerobats?
Flight medics in the Air Force.
Right.
So, took Michael out to the range because he was more interested, because with him shooting the precision air rifle stuff, we got him into the precision 22 matches, which he was shooting. He mentioned Mr. Lee. So he started shooting that, and then he progressed and stepped over and started shooting Steel Challenge with us as well. So, and then we basically just, Michael took all the stuff that we've been working on and took those fundamentals and moved them on to each sport.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's been really working out. So
yeah. So don't get bored with the paper targets, folks. There's a lot of places you can go from there. That's the beginning. That's not the end of your shooting. Steel challenge. Yeah. Steel challenge. Tell me about that. I think I know what it is, but I love shooting steel.
Yeah.
I think of like Hickok 45. You know, with his big range, and he hits his gong at 120 yards or however far that thing away with you know, like a 4-inch barrel revolver. It's like, how the hell did you do that? You know, it's pretty cool stuff. Yeah. What's the steel challenge?
So steel challenge is, there's only 8 stages that steel challenge can pull from, and typically you're always going to have 5 of those 8 at most of our matches. Sometimes they'll throw in an outlaw stage, which means they kind of make it up. But basically, they're always going to be the same, and you're shooting from a specific distance. So you have 5 strings of fire, and there's 5 targets. So you go up there, there's string 1, and you'll shoot all consecutive strings together. But there's 4 plates, and then there's a stop plate. And basically they go out of all your 5 strings, your slowest time gets thrown out. Now there's a little bit of other little rules to it as well. So if you skip a plate, that adds 3 seconds to your time. If you hit the stop plate first, that stops your time right there. The good thing about steel challenge, though, is anybody who wants to start into the competition practical shooting, that's the best way to start, because typically you're not in the term, air quotes, running and gunning. You're pretty much in a stationary, controlled environment. You're not having to run and reload, so you can reload between each consecutive string. And you're shooting steel, so you get to ring the steel, which everybody loves, versus hit paper, so you're getting that reaction from each trigger squeeze. So it's and plus the best thing about steel challenge I've noticed about traveling around it is such a family oriented sport. You'll see it, especially at the big matches, everybody knows everybody, and it's like one big family. And right now the junior shooters are owning the steel challenge world. So there's an 11-year-old that shot at World, and she shot one of the big matches with us, and this young lady is coming up in the world. She is just fast, you know, and I was
already, she's 11?
Like, oh, 11, and she came up there, you know, real small. I was like, this is cute. She's up here shooting. As soon as she stepped into the shooting box, she was in the zone, and her shots were so fast. I was like, what just happened? And it's just absolutely amazing. So steel challenge is definitely, I think, the starting point if you really are serious about getting into competition shooting, steel challenge, in which we have the second Saturday every month at Escambia River Gun Club.
Well, that's where I'm going to start too, and it sounds like fun. I'll probably take a class or I'll get you. I'll drag you out there. You
can, yeah, we'll go
you know,
out
make
there.
Sure. Yeah,
we can go out there the day before because they do have the stages start setting up, and you and me can kind of do a walkthrough, and we can go
okay.
start like how to step up to the line, how you know when the starting, you know, once the timer goes off to
mm-hmm.
unload and show clear, and then yeah, we can practice the course of fire so that day of competition you're walking up to it with confidence, and you can squad up with us misfits.
That'd be fun. See, the thing that I can do on this show, this is why I got into radio. I can do really cool stuff. This is going to be fun. And then we can report on it. We, you know, I don't know if you want to make a video or something like that, but we should, if you have any videos, well, I want to put them on the gun page
yeah.
too. And encourage,
that'd
you know, feel free to call. Yeah. We need your shameless plug because we only have about a minute left. So how do people get in touch with you how do they get reach the store?
Yeah.
How do they do that?
They can get a hold of me through Facebook at facebook.com/ChappieTactical, or they can get a hold of me on Instagram at Chappie Tactical. If they'd like to start shooting our competition USPSA matches soon, it's Facebook/ERPS USPSA or on Instagram at ERPS USPSA. We've been posting pictures of us doing a lot of work to get our range and our equipment ready, so we'll be posting more of that along there. And yeah, just get a hold of me, and I'll let you all know when we're going to start having our matches, or if you'd like to get a hold of me also to maybe do some training, we can do that as well.
Okay. And yeah, if anybody missed any of those things, that's where we podcast. So you can catch it then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, in fact, good thing I caught this at the last minute. I want to mention one of our other sponsors here. It's the last minute here, but I want to get this in. So thank you. Thank you, Chappie.
Thank you.
Let me just do a quick spot here for one of my folks, and then we're going to be done for the week. So thank you, sir.
Right,
we'll
okay.
do it again next Friday. Welcome to Action Radio. Nice job.
Thank you.
All right. So I just want to mention before we close the week off, Eric Colley, who is our new sponsor here, is also our webmaster. And we want to let you know that if you need help with your small business marketing, Eric Colley offers proven cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive. And this is the good part, without paid advertising. His phone number, 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. You can email him at Eric, that's E-R-I-C, at bsmallbusiness.com. And his website is bsmallbusiness.com. That's bsmallbusiness.com. Oh, boy. Chappie, when you listen to the show, if you get a chance to catch up from the beginning, this is one crazy show. We had a ton of information,
yeah.
a ton of callers. It's great to have you on the show, and I think we're going to be able to do some wonderful things here and get people more involved in shooting and competition. And let's get some gun tourism. Let's get people flying in, you know, for these competitions just to come see what we do here. All right, sir, that's it.
Absolutely.
Greg Pangloss here for blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back Monday morning at 7 o'clock Central Time with hopefully another week as incredible as this one has been. And this has been one incredible week. All right. We'll do it again then.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.